right. This day today is March 2nd, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 20:01 hours Eastern Standard Time, and I'm Ward Green. Welcome to today's study. We are on Chapter 7, Paragraph 10 of the Crucible of Credible Creed, an article published initially in 2012 and which continues to be edited over time. I'll be improving the text by correcting the typographical errors and things like that as we do go along, or at least at some point. Now, it is witnessed at Genesis 14 and 13 that Abraham lived at that time, which was the same as the time of Mamre, the Amorite, beneath whose big trees Abraham's tents were once pitched at Hebron in the land of Canaan. The oak of Mamre, or Abraham's oak, now dead, still stands at the site as of the writing of this article, and it is said to be 5,000 years old at the time of the writing of this article, which was some 10 years ago. Now, the writing of this article was, well, some 11 years ago, actually, for the article, or maybe 12, depending on when you are actually watching this. Maybe even much more than that if you're watching this much later, but it's still around 5,000 years old, unless you're watching this 1,000 years after, or 500 years after I'm making the video, meaning that it grew up, the 5,000 years means it's an approximate date that was obtained by carbon dating. I believe that's what they mean. And it grew up, that's what I meant when I wrote that, I believe. It grew up 292 years after the deluge, because in our chronology, the deluge was in 3282 BCE, a number which is very fascinating also for various reasons, based on the number 2668, which is 36 times 63, and it's the number which, when added to the year in which Solomon founded the temple at Jerusalem in our chronology 1014 BCE, yields 3282. But that's not how we obtained it, of course. That's after the fact we determined that there were, in fact, or at some point, we did add up the number of the years of the patriarchs and determined the total number of years to be from the years of the ages of the fathers when they begat their sons. We could determine how many years had passed from the time of the deluge all the way down to Solomon, and it was exactly this 3282 minus 1014, which is 2268, is it not? Yes, I believe it is. Because 1014 is about 1,000, so 2268 plus 1,000 is 3268, and 14 plus 68 is 82, so 3282 is the year of the deluge in our chronology. And when we take 5,000 minus 3282, we get 1718 is the difference. Is that right? Wait a minute. Yeah. But also, okay, it doesn't even see. Yeah, that's about right. 1718, which is about 306 years ago. 305 years ago. But 10 years ago, that would have been 292 years ago. See, so that's That's where we got that number. It serves to demonstrate. So, in other words, it grew up not in 3282, but 292 years after that. So when we subtract that from 5,000, we get a year close to 2012 when this article was written. So it can be worked out that it grew up 292 years after the deluge, but is that a great correspondence? Because it proves that our year for the deluge is correct if the tree really is 5,000 years old. In other words, it proves that the deluge didn't happen later in time than our date by more than 292 years. Because if it had, this tree couldn't exist, because it would have been wiped out by the deluge. So it serves to demonstrate that all things that grew on the earth, you know, were all killed by the deluge, unless they had an indestructible root structure or something, which very few trees do. But it serves to demonstrate that big trees, this is another thing it serves to demonstrate, there were big trees growing at Mamre, because this tree was there for 5,000 years, ever since 292 years after the deluge in our chronology. Our chronology is so good that we can even get the correct age for a tree and have it not be coming before the deluge, which in terms of its first year, which would be inconsistent. But Mamre near Hebron is near to the burial cave of Abraham also, okay? So Isaac and Ishmael, his sons, buried him in the cave of Machpelah in the field of Ephron, the son of Zohar, the Hittite, that is in front of Mamre. Genesis 25 and 9 and 23 and 9. We'll look at that. Genesis 25, we can say Genesis 23 and 9. Abraham asks the sons of Heth to urge Ephron, the son of Zohar, that he may give, in verse 9, that he may give me the cave of Machpelah, which is his, which is at the extremity of his field, for the full amount of silver. Let him give it to me in the midst of you for the possession of a burial place. That's the second of the two references that we mentioned. And Genesis 25 and 9. So Isaac and Ishmael, his sons, buried Abraham in the cave of Machpelah in the field of Ephron, the son. In the field of Ephron, the son of Zohar, the Hittite, that is in front of Mamre. In the field of Ephron, the Zohar, I almost said. In the field of Ephron, the son of Zohar, the Hittite, that is in front of Mamre. So there were many alien residents at the time of Abraham, of course, including him. He was an alien resident in the land. But even in the time of David, we hear about Ornan the Jebusite and Obed-Edom the Gittite. They were alien residents that were not of the tribe of, or any of the tribes of Israel, and they resided in the land. They were of the tribes of the peoples whom Jehovah permitted Israel to drive out of the land which he had promised to Abraham. Now, Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and 8, little children, is our scripture of proverb for today. If you see any oppression of the one of little means and the violent taking away of judgment and of righteousness in a jurisdictional district, do not be amazed over the affair, for one that is higher than the high one is watching, and there are those who are high above them. One that is higher than the high one is watching, and there are those who are high above them. I learned this, and I was very glad to learn this scripture, because I had never read the whole Bible. When I first learned about this scripture, I was reading the Bible from beginning to end, but also we were studying some of the publications of the Watchtower Society also. So I'm not sure when I learned this, whether it was in my own reading or whether it was during a study in some publication, or whether it was shared by some other brother. which is possible. But the thing is, the oppression that we see, right? This is a great scripture for everyone, including little children, because it very often happens that everyone, including little children, are astonished when somebody oppresses us or oppresses someone that we know. And we see that this person is treated wrong. Wrongly is the correct word there. I should use that correct grammar. But correct grammar is treated wrongly. If someone's treated wrongly, it makes us feel we don't know what to do. We don't know. We have no sense of what's right and wrong, or what the world is, what's happening in the world. If justice does not prevail, then what should we think or do? We're left completely feeling unsettled. But here, the answer is given in this scripture where it says, don't worry about this, because there is always someone watching, and always someone who is watching them. There's always someone watching who is above them. And that means if someone does something wrong, somebody above them will become aware of that, of the fact of the wrongdoing. The wrongdoing will not be hidden. Somebody is watching. It doesn't mean, that also means we don't have to report everything. We don't have to report something when someone does something wrong, because there's always somebody watching. And it could even be just an angel watching, but that angel can convey the information to the person to whom it needs to be conveyed, or Jehovah's always watching. He can take whatever steps he deems appropriate or necessary too. And Satan proceeded to stand up against Israel, 1 Chronicles chapter 21. And Satan proceeded to stand up against Israel and to incite David to number Israel. So here's an example where something happened that was wrong. Satan standing up against Israel is a wrongful act. And Jehovah would have known it. But Satan incited David to number Israel. So David said to Joab and the chiefs of the people, go, count Israel from Beersheba to Dan, and bring it to me that I may know their number. But Joab said, may Yahweh add to his people 100 times as many as they are. Do they not, O my lord the king, all of them belong to my lord as servants? Why does my lord seek this? Why should he become a cause of guilt to Israel? The king's word, however, prevailed over Joab. Naturally, the king's word would. So that Joab went out and walked through all Israel, after which he came to Jerusalem. Joab now gave the number of the registration of the people to David, and all Israel amounted to 1,100,000 men drawing sword. And Judah 470,000 men drawing sword, and Levi, I think we've learned the one way to pronounce it is Levi, although nobody pronounces it Levi, they pronounce it Levi. And Levi and Benjamin, he did not register in among them because the king's word had been detestable to Joab. That reminds me, Thomas Levi is the man who discovered this, or he didn't discover it. It was mentioned, I think, discovered by Nelson Gluck, the famous archaeologist, the mines at Kerbet en Nahas near the Arabah of the Salt Sea, south of the Salt Sea, in the land which probably was called Edom by the Israelites at the time of Solomon. And that was where it's believed that the great copper foundry was located, where they cast great, great, large items in copper. And in fiction, there was a place called Solomon's Mines. And this is sort of like a place which was not known about at the time, which was Kerbet and Nahas, which people connected with the fictional place called Solomon's Mines, where they had a great deal of copper, and it was used to make these copper implements of the temple by Solomon. And it was, we believe, or some people, including people today, believe that Kerbet and Nahas was the place where Solomon did that. Now, this thing was bad in the eyes of the true God. The fact that David had registered Israel, and so he struck down Israel. Consequently, David said to the true God, I have sinned very much in that I have done this thing. And now please cause your servant's error to pass away, for I have acted very foolishly. And Jehovah proceeded to speak to Gad. Yeah, that's Yahweh. Proceeded to speak to Gad, David's visionary, saying, go, and you must speak to David, saying, this is what Yahweh has said. There are three things that I am directing against you. Choose for yourself one of them, that I may do it to you. Accordingly, Gad went into David and said to him, this is what Yahweh has said. Take your pick. Whether for 3 years there is to be a famine, or for 3 months there is to be a sweeping away from before your adversaries, and for the sword of your enemies to overtake you, or for 3 days there is to be the sword of Jehovah, even pestilence in the land, with Yahweh's angel bringing ruin in all the territory of Israel. And now see what I should reply to the one sending me. So David said to Gad, it is very distressing to me. Please let me fall into the hand of Yahweh, for very many are his mercies, but into the hand of man do not let me fall. Then Yahweh gave a pestilence in Israel, so that out of Israel 70,000 persons fell. Moreover, the true God sent an angel to Jerusalem to bring ruin to it, and as soon as he began bringing the ruin, Yahweh saw it and began to feel regret over the calamity. And so he said to the angel that was bringing the ruin, it is enough. Now let your hand drop. And Yahweh's angel was standing close by the thrashing floor of Ornan the Jebusite. When David raised his eyes, he got to see Jehovah's angel standing between the earth and the heavens with his drawn sword in his hand that extended toward Jerusalem. And David and the older men, covered with sackcloth, at once fell down upon their faces. And David proceeded to say to the true God, was it not I that said to make a numbering of the people, and is it not I that have sinned and have unquestionably done bad? As for these sheep, what have they done? O Jehovah my God, let your hand please come to be upon me and my father's house, but not upon your people for a scourge. And Jehovah's angel for his part said to Gad, to say to David that David should go up to erect an altar to Yahweh on the thrashing floor of Ornan the Jebusite. Accordingly, David went up at the word of Gad that he had spoken in the name of Jehovah. A dictionary. What's that? I can't find it. I'm trying to find the dictionary. Here it is, okay. Yeah. Let's look at this for a second here. Thresh. Is it thresh or thrash? I think it's thresh. They thresh out the grain, but it's called the thrashing floor. Thrashing, you see? But thresh is pronounced thresh. Right, so that illustrates the point I was talking about some time ago, about thrashing. But in verse 20, Ornan turned back. And saw the angel, and his four sons with him were hiding themselves. Now Ornan had been thrashing wheat, So David came as far as Ornan. When Ornan looked and saw David, he immediately went out of the threshing floor and bowed down to David with his face to the earth. Then David said to Ornan, "Do give me the place of the threshing floor, that I may build in it an altar to Jehovah. For the money in full, give it to me, that the scourge may be halted from upon the people." But Ornan said to David, "Take it as your own, and let my lord the king do what is good in his own eyes. See, I do give the cattle for burnt offerings, and the thrashing sledge for the wood, and the wheat as a grain offering. The whole I do give." However, King David said to Ornan, "No, but without fail, I shall make the purchase for the money in full, because I shall not carry what is yours to Yahweh to offer up burnt sacrifices without cost." So David gave Ornan for the place gold shekels to the weight of 600. We know what gold is worth today. It was very, what's the word, valuable in those days too. Then David built there an altar to Jehovah and offered up burnt sacrifices and communion sacrifices. And he proceeded to call upon Jehovah, who now answered him with fire from the heavens upon the altar of burnt offering. Moreover, Jehovah said the word to the angel, who accordingly returned his sword to its sheath. At that time, when David saw that Yahweh had answered him at the threshing floor of Ornan the Jebusite, he continued to sacrifice there. So fire had come down from heaven upon the altar of burnt offering that David had constructed. But the tabernacle of Yahweh that Moses had made in the wilderness and the altar of burnt offering were at that time on the high place at Gibeon. After David had brought it from the house of Obed-Edom, the Gittite, and David had not been able to go before it to consult God, for he had been terrified because of the sword of Jehovah's angel. So he would have consulted God, but he was terrified because of the scourge of pestilence that was upon the land. And so, there's a noise I hear coming from some piece of equipment. Not sure which one. I don't think we're able to deal with it right now. I don't know when we'll be able to solve that one. It's not this. No, it's not the speakers. Israel is a degenerating vine. Hosea chapter 10. Now, Israel is a degenerating vine. Fruit he keeps putting forth for himself. In proportion to the abundance of his fruit, he has multiplied his altars. Interesting there that altars is appearing in this chapter as well as the one we just read where David was building an altar. And the altar of burnt offering was mentioned also in the same chapter in 1 Chronicles chapter 21 after Satan had incited David to number the people. In proportion to the goodness of his land, verse 1 of Hosea chapter 10, they put up good pillars. Their heart has become hypocritical. Now they will be found guilty. There is one who will break their altars. He will despoil their pillars, for now they will say, "We have no king, for we have not feared Yahweh." And as regards the king, what will he do for us? They speak words, making false oaths, concluding a covenant, and judgment has sprouted like a poisonous plant in the furrows of the open field. For the calf idol of Bethaven, the residents of Samaria, will get frightened. For the calf idol of Bethaven, the residents of Samaria, will get frightened. For over it, its people will certainly mourn, as well as its foreign god priests, who used to be joyful over it. on account of its glory, because it will have gone into exile away from it. Even it someone will bring to Assyria itself as a gift to a great king. Shame is what Ephraim himself will get, and Israel will be ashamed of its counsel. Ephraim being a symbol of the whole nation of Israel. Samaria and her king will certainly be silenced like a snapped-off twig on the surface of waters. And the high places of Bethaven, the sin of Israel, will actually be annihilated. Thorns and thistles themselves will come up upon their altars, and people will in fact say to the mountains, "Cover us," and to the hills, "Fall over us." From the days of Gibeah you have sinned, O Israel. Gibeah was the place from which Saul came, his family. There they stood still in Gibeah. War against the sons of unrighteousness did not get to overtake them. And Saul was, in fact, the first king of Israel, who was an unrighteous king. When it is my craving, verse 10, I shall also discipline them, and against them peoples will certainly be gathered, when there is a harnessing of them to their two errors. There were two calves at this place of worship in the northern kingdom of Israel. And Ephraim, verse 11, was a trained heifer, loving to thresh. And isn't that interesting? We encounter the word thresh in this chapter, as we did also in the reading for today in 1 Chronicles 21. And there's no planning there on my part other than the preparation I did. I didn't plan that we'd be reading these chapters today, though. Jehovah arranged this somehow without my knowledge. And it goes on, verse 11, I, for my part, passed over her good-looking neck, meaning the heifer of Ephraim, the Ephraimic heifer, the heifer representing Ephraim, her good-looking neck. I passed over her neck. I make someone ride Ephraim. Judah plows, Jacob harrows for him. Sow seed for yourselves in righteousness. Reap in accord with loving kindness. Till for yourselves arable land when there is time for searching for Yahweh, until he comes and gives instruction in righteousness to you. You people have plowed wickedness. Here's an illustration. You people have plowed wickedness. Unrighteousness is what you have reaped. You have eaten the fruitage of deception, for you have trusted in your way, in the multitude of your mighty ones. And there's another amazing correspondence, a remarkable truthful correspondence, because the multitude of the mighty ones corresponds really well with the census taken by David to determine how many in the army he had in Israel, for which purpose he took the census, as incited by Satan, which wasn't good, because they trusted in the multitude of the mighty ones when they took the census. And verse 14 of Hosea chapter 10, now, and an uproar has arisen among your people, and your own fortified cities will all be despoiled, as with the despoiling by Shalman of the house of Arbel in the day of battle, when a mother herself was dashed to pieces alongside her own sons. We don't know any more about this. Oh, I know what that is. That noise is from the battery pack when it's charging. So I can unplug that, and that eliminates that noise. But I haven't been doing that recently because it wasn't making a noise recently, but it did in the past. So we don't know anything about, getting back to the verse here, we don't know anything about this Arbel, the house of Arbel, nor do we know about Shalman of the house of Arbel. It's not in the Bible, but it is something that was known at this time to the prophet Hosea. In the day of battle, when a mother herself was dashed to pieces alongside her own sons. In this way, one will certainly do to you people, O Bethel, Bethel is again another reference. That was where the calves were located, I believe. The two golden calves were at Bethel. They've been placed there by the first king of the northern kingdom of Israel, whose name was Jeroboam, the first king of Israel, who split off from the southern kingdom at the time of the beginning of the reign of Rehoboam, the son of Solomon. So because of your extreme badness, it continues in verse 15, in the dawn the king of Israel will positively have to be silenced. And that's the end of Hosea chapter 10. We have about 2 minutes remaining. Oh, Bethel, the calves that were located at Bethel. It seems to me these things keep coming back to mind when we've read the Bible. They will come back to us. Let's look up the golden calves, see whether it mentions Bethel. I think it's going to mention it as to do with... golden calves. There it is. 2 Kings. The golden calves, of which one was in Bethel and one in Dan. There we are. This was in 2 Kings 10 and 29. So Bethel was associated with one of these golden calves. I'd remembered that. Now what about Bethel and the calves? Let's try that search. A search of Bethel calves. 1 Kings. There, yeah. You see, it says in 1 Kings 12 and 32 that Jeroboam had made an altar in Bethel, and it was to sacrifice to the calves that he had made. So the calves at one time were both in Bethel, it appears. They were both there at one time until one of them was moved to Dan. Oh, no, there it is. Here it is in verse 29. He placed one in Bethel, 1 Kings 12 and 29, and the other he put in Dan. But he made the sacrifices in Bethel to both calves. Ah, we learned something today, didn't we? Little children, I hope you enjoyed the study. And I have been very pleased to be with you. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. And today's date is March 2nd, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 20:33 hours Eastern Standard Time. That's the end of our video for today, and we conclude the study by saying that in my behalf, this is Lib Dusty, and this is Cassie. They're saying bye for now.